This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Now, here's Frank Morano.
Apparently fewer and fewer people have Jesus on their mind. The share of adults who say they never or rarely attend religious services has gone up significantly. I think, you know, I'm far from a holy roller, but I think this is a real shame for the country, you know, because I think that look, I recognize organized religion is not a positive for everybody, but I think for the most part, and I realize there are different, a lot of different faiths that we're talking about here, and I'm painting with a broad brush, but I think for the most part, the messages that come from organized religion are positive ones. They're positive for society, they're positive about how to treat other people, and they're positive for being charitable and doing good things and avoiding antisocial or illegal behavior. Things like avoiding murder, things like avoiding adultery, things like avoiding all sorts of things. So as Americans observe Ramadan and prepare to celebrate Easter and Passover, the percentage of adults who report regularly attending religious services remains quite low. 3 in 10 Americans say they attend religious services every week or almost every week. That is, so 21% say they do every week. 9% say they do almost every week. 11% report attending about once a month, and 56% say seldom. And 31% say never. Among major U.S. religious groups, Mormons are the most observant, with 2/3 attending church weekly or nearly weekly. Protestants, including non-denominational Christians, rank second, followed by Muslims and Catholics. Majorities of Jewish, Orthodox, Buddhist, and Hindu Americans say they seldom or never attend religious services. And the other aspect of this that I think is very deleterious for the country is what I alluded to with Michael Smirkanish earlier, which is I think it's important, whether it's church, whether it's Rotary, whether it's Kiwanis, whether it's your local Democratic club meeting, whether it's the PTA, whether it's a community board, I think it's so whether it's bowling leagues, that was the premise of Robert Putnam's book, Bowling Alone. It's so important for Americans to go out there and interact with one another, which is why I love what Smirkanish is doing with the Mingle Project. I think it's great. I think we need to get off the computer. I mean, look, I'm on the computer all day long, so I don't mean get off the computer, but not use the computer as a means of your sole interaction with people. I think we need more in-person interaction. And, you know, I grew up Roman Catholic, but I've come to mostly view myself as an Episcopalian, and I go to Episcopal services for, you know, a variety of reasons. But I'll tell you, the first thing, maybe about 6 years ago, that made me fall in love with the Episcopal Church was the coffee hour that they do after church services. I started going to Episcopal services because there was a beautiful Episcopal church right next to the radio station that I was working at, and I was working Sundays at the time. So I said, oh, if I'm going to be here working Sundays, Why don't I just pop over to a church? Okay, it's right next door. It's not a Catholic church, but at least I'm at church. And I found that the service was all the stuff that I really liked about Catholicism with some stuff that Catholicism doesn't do that I also liked. I like that the priests could be married. I like that they're with female priests. I like that they still say, and also with you, which they don't say in Catholic services anymore. But I absolutely loved at the end of the service in the back of the church right after, there was coffee and muffins and bagels and donuts, and then just a half hour or an hour for people to have fellowship with one another. And that was something that I never really experienced at most of the Catholic services that I'd gone to most of my life. So I really think that the decline in religious services or people who attend religious services, it's bad news for the country because we're not seeing those messages that are communicated in church, which are for the most part positive. But I think it's even if you don't believe in God, I think it's bad news for the country in that it's one less venue where people are interacting with one another in person. And I think that's a shame. So I was sorry to see that. Comment as you like. 800-848-9222. By the way, do you know what state has the highest share of adults who say they never or seldom attend church? Any guesses, Tony? What state has the least church attendance?
Florida.
Florida. Why'd you pick Florida?
Just a random pick.
It is not Florida. Think a much colder climate, other side of the country.
Minnesota.
No, but you're on the right track now.
Michigan?
No, but
North Dakota.
It's not North Dakota. So I'm
Montana.
Just gonna tell you. No. No. The number
Alaska.
One, no. Not, why are you picking all the states that we have listeners? We have a very pious group
cold.
Of listeners.
You did say cold climate.
It is cold. Okay. The number one state with the highest percentage of adults that say they never or seldom attend church is Vermont. The state of Vermont, you ready for this? 75% of Vermonters say they never or seldom attend church. So you will not be seeing Bernie Sanders in your local synagogue in the state of Vermont. This is the state that comes in second in the least religious state category, New Hampshire, the Granite State. And number three, a little bit surprised at this, Maine. You know what it is? I think probably because the lobster is so delicious up there, a lot of people don't want to participate in religions that don't allow them to eat the lobster. That's probably what it is. But on the other side, the states that have the lowest share of adults who say they never or seldom attend church services are Mississippi, Alabama, and Louisiana. So there's that. Okay. 800-848-9222 if you want to comment on that. I saw another thing. You know, I don't know if you've ever watched Star Trek, but Tony, you Star Trek fan? I know Matt Blaze is not into it.
Back in the days, I used to watch the original episode.
Okay, so you've seen it.
I can't tell you about the new ones.
No. I'm not up to date on all the new ones either. But you've seen Star Trek, right? So they beam down. Back in those days, the captain went on away mission. So Kirk, Spock, McCoy, and a guy in a red shirt beam down to a foreign planet. Maybe it's a planet they've been to routinely, like Vulcan. Maybe it's a planet that they've never been to. They beam down and they speak English to the aliens that they encounter. The aliens have no problem understanding Kirk, Spock, and McCoy's English. The aliens speak back in a way that the Enterprise crew was able to understand. How come? How come they're able to communicate?
I guess that's the way. You got me, man.
Okay. The reason they're all able to communicate is because of the universal translator. These guys have a universal translator. And so they're able to communicate with everybody. With everybody, even though they don't know Klingon. They don't know the Romulan language. They don't know the Ferengi language. But they're all able to communicate like they are. So anyway, advanced artificial intelligence tools could eventually make learning a foreign language obsolete at a cost a lot of people are afraid of to meaningful human connections. Apps can now generate deep fake videos of users speaking in dozens of languages and platforms and streaming sites, and they are rushing to integrate AI translation technology. So the number of students learning other languages while this is all going on. So understand, on the technological end of things, we're getting to a place where you're not going to need to learn a foreign language. If I want to do this show in Spanish, if I wanted to do it years ago, I would have had to learn Spanish. You remember, you know, Mike Bloomberg and Bill de Blasio, they were all about, and now a word for our listeners in Spanish. You're not going to have to do that anymore. There's just a, you know, there's an AI template that allows all of, you know, all of what you're saying to be translated in some cases in real time to another language. So gone will be the days where you have, you know, Mike Bloomberg or Bill de Blasio warning about a snowstorm. And then they'll say, oh, and for our listeners in Spanish, ba, 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 ba. Now, the current New York City mayor, you know what he uses to communicate in Spanish? Doesn't use an interpreter, doesn't learn Spanish himself. Instead, he will, you know, basically just use AI to communicate. Do we have a little bit of Eric Adams speaking Spanish?
Soy el alcalde Eric Adams. Queremos invitarlo a venir a trabajar con la ciudad de Nueva York y ayudar a hacer que esta gran ciudad sea aún mejor. Estamos felices de llevar nuestra próxima sesión informativa de empleo a su comunidad, en la cual.
Now he sent out those messages in every language through AI. It sounds like him. It sounds like he's speaking Spanish or Russian or Chinese or all these different voices. He's not speaking it. He's not speaking it at all. But by using AI, he's able to mimic the same kind of thing that other politicians used to have to actually learn the language to do. So while that's going on, the number of students learning other languages is simultaneously dropping. A technology journalist, Louise Matsakis, has noted this in The Atlantic. But as real-time translation becomes commonplace and frictionless, she writes in The Atlantic that people are going to lose out on the joy and discovery of learning different languages. Experts likened it to discovering a new way to think. They say that no machine can replace such a profoundly human experience. But I got news for you. Pretty soon, learning Spanish and any other language, really, that's not the one you already speak, it's going to be like learning to operate an abacus or learning to change your oil. Or learning to navigate using an astrolabe. All of these skills that technology has made it that you don't need to learn anymore. Or how to drive a stick shift vehicle. There's still some people that do it, but it's rarer and rarer. And I think that's a real shame. So those are the two things that I take issue with that society is doing. No one's going to church anymore or some sort of religious services. And AI is making it so that nobody has to learn a foreign language. I think both of those are for the worse. We're going to talk with Noam Layden and Brian Kilmeade in a bit. Meantime, let me take some of your calls, 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. Let me say hello to Gary in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. Hi, Gary.
Hey, Frankie. I clean offices at nighttime during the AM hours, so I got time in between to listen. You talked about church, why people don't go, or in a big way. Percentage is low. Let's face the facts. Nobody can pay their mortgage. Nobody can pay their rent. Prices of food are high. 1945, when World War II was over, everybody was happy. Go to church. But now people are not happy. They can't afford to live.
Well, but Gary, we've had other economic recessions and depressions in our country's past before. Why didn't we see a similar downturn in church attendance? I think if memory serves, during some of those tough times, church attendance actually went up because a lot of people were praying that things would improve. Why weren't we seeing the same similar decline if the reason that you're describing is the reason that fewer people are going to church? Not going to church.
Frank, you got me on that one. That was awesome what you just said. You know, the Depression, they were still going to church then. I mean, if there was a time to be disgusted with life, it was during the Depression. I can't answer that, but you got me there. But like I said, I have to back it up 100%. And before I let you go, because I got to work, is, I mean, when I hear people, friends of mine, they're in their 40s and 50s, and they're not paying their bills on time, and, you know, and the groceries, this, that, even though the kids are older now, you know, college, this, that, and they're in their 20s, they're still disgusted with life. To making a mortgage payment and not having enough food in the refrigerator, they don't go out to restaurants anymore.
Yeah, I try. I'm going to not as often. Well, a lot of the reason that I don't go out is because of my hours and because of the difficulty with a babysitter. But yeah, I do go to restaurants still. I enjoy going to restaurants. I'm going to try and go out to dinner tonight to break my Lenten fast and have a glass of wine or something. But these numbers are real. All faiths, or at least nearly all faiths, have seen a decline in regular religious service attendance. 2 decades ago, not long in the grand scheme of things, an average of 42% of U.S. adults attended religious services every week or nearly every week. A decade ago, the figure fell to 38%, and it's now at 30%. So in just 20 years, we've gone from 42% to 38% to 30%, and the decline is largely driven by the increase in the percentage of Americans with no religious affiliation. It was 9% in the year 2000, and it's 21% now. Almost all of them don't attend services regularly. But a lot of these religious groups have also seen a decline in regular attendances at religious services over the past 2 decades. Mormons have seen a slight decline. Protestant, slight decline. Muslim, Catholic, Jewish, Orthodox, Buddhist, Hindu. They've all seen a decline. 800-848-9222. Tommy, what's on your mind?
Good morrow.
Howdy.
Frank, how are you doing? I was just thinking about something. Years ago, there was a book by Adams. It was called The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. And I thought it might have been a nice segue into your universal translator. Do you remember the babblefish?
Yeah.
You used to stick it in your ear, and it would give you access to every language in the in the galaxy or the universe. You remember that?
I do. That's actually my favorite series of books, and I recommend it to everybody. And I know especially the first three books quite well, but I think I know them all. And you're right. I think in the book they call it a babblefish, but
Babel.
It's still spelled the same way as the Tower of Babel, which is clearly the idea behind it. So, you know, I'm sure Babel Fish is appropriate as well. And yeah, you're right. That was how all these people would communicate. They would stick the Babel Fish in their ears, and they'd be able to understand everything from Vogon poetry to, you know, the musings of small furry creatures from Alpha Centauri. That just goes to show you what a brilliant man Douglas Adams was, and how horrible it was that he died at such a young age.
I think we need to go to the restaurant at the end of the universe. That might be an interesting.
You remember the name of it, Tommy?
The restaurant at the end of the universe?
Yeah.
No, I don't. Do you?
Milliways. It was Milliways, the restaurant at the end of the universe, where every night it's even better than every night being New Year's Eve. Every night the universe ends. And I love that book. That might be my favorite book in the series, the second one, The Restaurant at the End of the Universe. It's great. I mean, the whole scene with, you know, it's I don't even want to spoil it for people that haven't seen the book, but where they're being served a pig that actually wants to be eaten. Arthur Dent is so turned off that he wants to get a salad instead. That is one of the few books I've ever read where I'm reading it silently and I literally start laughing out loud. I don't know that I could pick another book that that's the case, where I'm reading it and I'm laughing out loud. I mean, heartily. I mean, it's really terrific. Tommy, thanks for the stroll down memory lane. Brandon, what's on your mind?
Hey, Frank. I agree with you on both topics. I mean, I was never a huge church-going person once I reached adulthood. You know, growing up, I was went to church a lot. But, you know, even so, like, I go more for my son. So he kind of gets that.
Sure. That's nice.
A little bit. And, you know, you do leave church, you know, feeling better and, you know, wanting to do good. So I think it is a shame. As far as the AI thing, even now, like, my son, where I live, there's a lot of Spanish speaking people. So my son will make friends with some of these kids, and he uses his tablet to, you know, ask Google how to say something in Spanish, and then Google play it in Spanish and they communicate back and forth like that. So I could definitely see this AI thing being the future.
I don't think it's the future though, Brandon. I think it's the present. I think people are doing this all over the place. Look, I played you the audio of Eric Adams, and I think that's going to become the norm. You know, I wasn't joking when I'd love for this program to be broadcast on foreign radio stations in my voice, in whatever language those folks are. I mean, think of what an incredible thing that is. You can have, if you're a politician, a media person, a marketer, or even, you know, really anything that you want to communicate with large groups of people, you don't even have to learn the language anymore. It's a brave new world.
Yeah, it's a shame too, because people that could speak multiple languages, you know, the jobs that were out there for them, you know, they can make hundreds of thousands of dollars, and that's going to all become obsolete.
Yeah. I mean, certainly you wonder how long the UN is still going to use translators instead of outsourcing that job to AI. Brandon, thanks for the call. Give our best to Brandon the Younger. Somebody just sent me an SMS text message saying, didn't someone say pray in a closet? Oh, who would say such a crazy thing? Probably some Arab hippie. 800-848-9222, or some carpenter, I don't know. 800-848-9222. Mike is in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Hi, Mike.
Good morning, Frank.
Morning.
Well, some of the reasons why people don't go to church is they run away from God. They find excuses. Look what the priest did when they will still go to a Penn State game, even though something over there happened. You know, God is another thing is that people don't, like, when people get married, they don't get married in the church no more. Let's go to Mexico and all. I know that you perform marriages, and I think that's something that, you know, hey, you're a radio host. You shouldn't be performing marriages. That's what the priest and ministers are for.
Well, I'm also an ordained minister in the Universal Life Church.
Listen, if you have a church, you have a following, you should have a church. You should have a place of worship where they should go to the altar to get married. That's part. That keeps the tradition. That keeps the people close to the community. That's another thing too. A lot of times, well, I don't like what that priest says, so I'm going to go over to this church over here. I don't like what this church is doing, so I'm going to go over here. And they go miles away. Sometimes they go, you know, they got an hour's drive to get to a church to feel good. But meanwhile, the community goes down. When you look at the Hasidic Jews, they don't get a house unless it's close to the synagogue. Community stayed strong when the churches were together.
I agree with you. I raised that. Well, I don't agree that I shouldn't be performing marriages. I don't agree with that at all. But I do agree that the futures and the condition of a community church or any, you know, any place of worship and the community itself are inexorably linked. I really do think that's true. 800-848-9222, Noam Layden and Brian Kilmeade coming up in a moment. But first, let me say hello to Tony in Maryland. Hi, Tony.
Hey, Frank. How you doing?
Well, if I'm being candid, I'm in my element like an owl at a poetry reading, wise, mysterious, and occasionally hooting for joy.
So normal, right?
Exactly.
you're talking about the languages. There's an old language that didn't really take off. It was called Esperanto. Not sure if you ever heard of it.
Absolutely. They thought this was going to be the next big thing, right? And they this was going to be the big thing. And William Shatner even made a movie in Esperanto. It's called Incubus. And you could look it up online. You could see Shatner speaking Esperanto. Okay. And all the actors in this picture learned Esperanto. And then by the time the film premiered, all the actors had forgotten Esperanto because they weren't speaking it regularly. So they all went to the premiere, and even the actors that were in the film couldn't understand what was being said.
Yeah, didn't catch on, but it was a very interesting concept.
Indeed. Indeed it was. Thank you for that, Tony. All right. Gnome Laden and Brian Kilmeade join me straight ahead.
The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is Greg Kelly. To my friends in the construction business, if you've been injured on the job, make just one call to the Construction Accident Lawyers at the law offices of Darren T. Moore. With hundreds of five-star reviews, they fight for more justice for every client and have secured millions of dollars in compensation for New York construction workers. Call 888-444-ATTY. That's 888-444-2889 for a free consultation. More diligence, more persistence, and more justice.
Prior results don't guarantee similar outcomes.
It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
Beat up little seagull on a marble step, trying to find ocean, looking everywhere. Hard times in the city.
The great Randy Newman singing about Baltimore. We just got an update from Ray in Baltimore, our man on the street, and we're going to hopefully check in with him tomorrow. Apparently, the reason they have not gotten the other bodies out of the water yet is because they're not able to get there from the from the boat. But the good news is the NTSB is saying there's 6 hours of data from the ship's data recorder available. So hopefully we'll learn more about what happened here as we continue to update you on that. Meanwhile, a guy that has been doing a yeoman's job covering this and every other story is Gnome Laden.
Stand by for the Other Side of Midnight's news.
City, the Other Side of Midnight and its affiliated stations present national and international news with Frank Morano and news director Gnome Laden. Their summary of the world news and personal comments. Get the rest of the story.
Hello, Gnome.
Good morning, Frank. Just a short time ago, King Charles releasing his Easter message. It's something that the Queen used to do. Now it's the King's turn. And we thought we might get some insight when he released this Easter message into his health or into Princess Kate's health. Here's a little bit of what it sounded like.
Heart goes out to all who this day, whatever their beliefs, are being persecuted on religious grounds. And at this time of Easter, when our minds are recalled to the suffering of our Lord 2,000 years ago, we think especially of those Christians who are suffering for their faith so in many places around the world.
It goes on for about 3.5 minutes. No mention of his health or the family's health. No mention of Princess Kate. He keeps the message just on Easter, and that's it. So we get no insight into how he's doing. Looks okay, so that's good, because we haven't seen a lot of the king since his cancer announcement. Princess Kate has told us we won't see a lot of her since her cancer announcement. And this continues as the world is just a crazy place. Mm. So here she comes out, Kate. We had that photo of her, sure, which clearly was photoshopped. So now nobody believes, it seems, or a lot of people don't, that this video is real. All kinds of social media chatter after her video came out last week saying that they thought this had been created by AI, that there's a ring on her finger that disappears and reappears. Her hair moves unnaturally in that video. A bed of daffodils in the background is suspiciously still. But the BBC, which apparently helped produce this video, said that's just total nonsense. This is a real video. People want to believe whatever they want to believe.
This is the video of her announcing
about
her cancer
last Friday. Yeah. So, but people are just nuts. And so, there's all kinds of people, if you go on to TikTok today, any of the social media platforms, circling parts of Kate's video from last Friday where it wasn't legit. But anyway, the King Charles message I found, by the way, quite nice. So if you go to look for it, it's about 3.5 minutes where he talks about the meaning of Easter, and then he talks about how the religious season is big for other religions around the world as well.
And it sounds like the small portion that you played there, the only portion that I've heard, opposing religious persecution, that's certainly a positive message any day of the year.
Yeah. This is happening in New York City, but we've seen examples of it elsewhere. Women in New York City are getting sucker punched. Mm. And initially, we were seeing, again, talking about TikTok, we had seen some examples on TikTok of women getting on and showing where they had been punched, and in some cases right after they were punched by strange men, totally unprovoked. And now it seems that this is a real problem in New York City. Now, we don't know. In one case, there is one man that they have arrested who they think is behind a series of these sucker punches. But what the NYPD says, when we were talking to them yesterday, is said, yeah, we've seen these TikTok videos that have gone viral of these women who've said they've been punched. And it's clear when you watch them, they look real. I mean, they have real injuries. They're pretty hysterical on these videos when they talk about it. So now the question is something really going on? Well, the answer is the NYPD says, we just don't know. So there was a thought that maybe this was some sort of gang initiation, and that's why these women are being punched. But the NYPD says many of these women that they've seen on TikTok have not necessarily reported their crimes to the NYPD. That doesn't suggest they're not real. But I think in some cases they're just afraid. They got punched, and they're hoping this will go away. In one case, we spoke to a woman yesterday. The punch was so hard. She's a school bus aide in Brooklyn. And she said, same thing. She was walking down a street in Brooklyn. A guy's coming the other way. In all these cases, by the way, so cowardly, almost all of these cases, the women were walking alone on a block by themselves, nobody else around. So it tells you just how cowardly these acts are. But in the case of the school bus aide, she's walking down the street. She gets punched so hard. This was on Tuesday. That she's now had her jaw wired shut.
Geez.
Yeah, I mean, it's awful. And she had three teeth knocked out. That's how bad it was. In her case, there was somebody nearby who saw what was taking place. They chased this creep for 3 or 4 blocks. They were able to tackle him, and he held them down until the cops arrived, and he was arrested. So we've had 2 arrests that we know of, but the NYPD says this may be a thing. They don't want to freak out people, but they say it may be a thing. They don't know. I asked, hey, is this gang initiation? Because we've had weird stories like this in the past. They just don't know.
Well, thank you, Gnome.
And now you know the rest of the story.
All right. If you want to comment on any portion of our discussion with Gnome Layden, be my guest, 800-848-9222. We're going to connect with Brian Kilmeade in just a moment. It's been a while since I talked to Brian last week. I think he was traveling. The week before that, I was traveling. So it's been about 3 weeks since we spoke. Hopefully, we still remember how to do this. We'll see where that goes. Tomorrow, very excited for tomorrow's show. I'm going to be joined by legendary criminal defense attorney Norm Pattis. There's certainly a lot of legal issues to break down. And speaking of Jesus, I'm going to be joined by, I'm trying to put together a pastor and a scholar to discuss the Shroud of Turin. Is it real? I mean, it's really one of history's greatest mysteries. So we will get into that in a big way tomorrow. I'm looking forward to that conversation, and hopefully you'll be on board for that as well. And then, as always, we'll do Ask Frank Anything as we do the first hour of the program as well. Meantime, let me say hello as we await Brian Kilmeade to Viviana in Brooklyn. How are you, Viviana?
I am very, very joyful. We're reaching the highest part of our season in the religious camp.
Viviana, I'm sorry, I'm losing you. If you can try and get to an area with better reception, I'm not able to hear you. But certainly, I can understand the sentiment by which you were speaking about and talking about. No doubt about it. All right, we do have the great Brian Kilmeade, New York Times bestselling author, co-host of Fox and Friends, and a nationally syndicated radio talk show host. Hello there, Brian.
What's going on, Frank? How are you?
I'm doing great. It's great to talk to you again. I've missed you the last couple of weeks. Brian, a lot I want to get to in a short amount of time. First, we saw the passing of Senator Joe Lieberman. If I was going to pick somebody that was your intellectual brother in solidarity, at least on foreign policy, it would absolutely be Joe Lieberman. I'm sure you got to interview him 100 times over the years. Give me your thoughts on his passing and his legacy.
I can't tell you what a great guy he was. And you know, I met him off camera, on camera, on mic, off mic. And he always had interesting things to say. And we always talk about country first. This guy meant it. They ran with Al Gore and then said, you know, I can't see eye to eye with this foreign policy. I think we're spending too much. And his best friend was John McCain. Second best friend was Lindsey Graham. And they would travel around. Next thing you know, they primary the guy in Connecticut. He goes, okay, well, Ned Lamont, you could have that primary. I'm going to run as independent. See what the people of Connecticut think. And he wins. So the once darling of the Democratic Party, number two to Al Gore, now all of a sudden goes in, and it's such a close, the numbers are so close, so they can't alienate him. So he gets a chairmanship, and he uses it to be bipartisan. And it drives them nuts, because he is somebody that just, you think Joe Manchin bucked the system? That's nothing compared to Joe Lieberman. And, you know, when he decides to retire, he ends up forming no labels right after. Mm-hmm. And the guys he's most associated with, you know, he was a finalist to be the Secretary of Defense for Trump. In the end, he went a different direction, but he didn't hate Trump. He would disagree when he disagreed, but he's like, he didn't wake up every day disliking him. He said, okay, does a lot of good things. This is where I'm at. Don't like the attitude on this, and wouldn't have called Rosie O'Donnell that, but he still saw good in him. And I just, so I'm gonna miss talking to him. His role was indispensable. And you see people coming in. Anyone who comes out and says, well, he really wasn't a good guy, they just don't know him.
I haven't heard anyone say that so far. Yeah. I mean, even people that disagree with him vehemently politically, I haven't heard anybody say that at all. Hey, Brian, give me your take on this. I mean, to the extent that there's a take to be had on the Baltimore bridge collapse and what we're seeing in the coming days and weeks. What kind of a challenge does that present to you to cover an event like this?
Well, here's the thing. This is what I'm looking for now. We got five people, and that's the recovery efforts happening. The recovery effort is one team. The bridge effort is another team. The bridge debris team is one team, and the new bridge construction and design is another. And then we got to get the port open. Mm. So to me, you break this up into teams. I'm here for you. I got your support. It's so great to see. Enough. And we're not at the point where you don't want to see a speech. I want to find out exactly what went wrong, see if this was sabotage or not. I mean, it's hard to believe 30 minutes into a ride, a route to Sri Lanka that has just gone across the world. I mean, what the hell happened? Not smart enough to figure it out, but this is what these people do. Get the bridge debris out.
Well, so, Brian, you actually back. Think maybe when you say sabotage that it could be some sort of an act of terrorism?
I have no proof of that, but I would like to find out what went wrong. I mean, these are the worst maintenance people ever. I mean, 30 minutes, and it loses total power and hits a bridge.
Well, and the speculation that they were using dirty fuel, perhaps. The Wall Street Journal wrote about that yesterday.
I heard about that. Yeah. So let's get to the bottom of it. But I want that port active again. Get that port going. Please don't tell me you're going to wait for the bridge to be designed again to get the port going.
Mm-hmm.
It's the only place in the East Coast where you get hazard material in and out. Number two is, if I'm President Biden, I have bridge designers at the White House this weekend. And I use the power of the White House to say, how you doing? This is President Biden. I hear you the best. I hear, come in with bridge designs. I need five of them. I need that design going. Can we get a temporary bridge, World War II style, to get some traffic across there now? And if not, it's okay. I'm not an engineer. And then we get that barge out and we get the bridge debris out. So get these teams going. Use the power of the office. Oh, my goodness, here's the President of the United States, and he appreciates the debris field. And he's there every day. I mean, he's not there yet, and whatever reason, he's going to do his big fundraiser at Radio City with Bill Clinton and Barack Obama just across the street from us. So he's got that $100,000, I think, entrance to get mm-hmm. a picture with them. So, okay, I understand that's on the books, and you got people working. These are the other things I'm looking for. Someone wrote me yesterday of significance and said, don't use my name, but Wes Moore, the whole team, says he's going to dominate this and use this to launch a 2028.
And
Wes Moore is the governor of Maryland. He's a Rhodes Scholar, Army vet, who won. Donald Trump endorsed somebody that really wasn't strong, but he won in Maryland. He's got a lot of charisma, poise, very smart, good-looking guy. But let's see him do stuff. I'm not saying he can't. Let's see him execute. And they say this is the last shot for Pete Buttigieg. I mean, how many things has he screwed up so far? Going late to Palestine, you see how many times, first time ever, all planes been grounded. You got the balloon. I mean, where's this guy stepped up and done anything except sanction Southwest? So this is another opportunity for him to distinguish himself. And look, go ahead and do it, because we benefit. That's why when people say, oh, these politicians have big egos. Yeah, if it results them getting things done for the people that put them there to satisfy that ego, I'm okay with it. If that outstanding center is a bit of a prima donna, but it brings me a championship, I could deal with it.
As far as Pete Buttigieg goes, Brian, what exactly in this crisis would you characterize him as having done wrong so far?
Nothing. Zero.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing wrong.
So this is kind of where the rubber meets the road for him. I get you.
Exactly.
I
got
you. Hey, a couple things.
He showed up right away. Number one, showing up means a difference. He could not get that through his head.
No, I get it. Hey, a couple things I want to run by you before we run out of time. Marjorie Taylor Greene is now leading the effort, seemingly, to get rid of Speaker Mike Johnson. Comes at a bad time for him and for the House Republicans, because it looks like they're losing another member. Congressman Mike Gallagher is leaving. We're seeing congressman after congressman leaving, not finishing their term, and this is going to lead to Ken Buck is leaving. This is going to lead to potentially a one-seat majority, essentially, if they really all vote along party lines. What's your take on this latest dissatisfaction with Speaker Mike Johnson?
He has to cut a deal. He got this job right in the middle of budget negotiations, and he has to get a deal. Look, Chip Roy says he never came up to me, didn't give me the 72 hours. I got it. I don't think you could judge him this year. He came in an emergency situation. But as Kevin McCarthy said, the problem that Mike Johnson has, he's extremely smart and he's well-liked, but he's never been in leadership, he's never been a chairman. So he doesn't know what it's like to herd the cats. And he doesn't have relationships with everyone. Kevin McCarthy got basically two-thirds of those people elected. You know, he has all their cell phone numbers. He knows their wives. So that's why I was so against him getting rid of him. He put the time in. This guy's going to small town America, going to the diners with these people and helped them organize and put together staffs. So when you lost him, you lost so much. So Marjorie Taylor Greene, it's just a lack of discipline. No one's backing her. You know, Speaker Johnson actually has reached out, and we've been texting back and forth, and he just said, listen, I know you're going to be talking about this. I just think you should know what the reality is. And number two, he's going to fund Ukraine, and I think he's going to do it in a standalone. It's going to drive people nuts, but it's absolutely the right thing to do. And then after that, he's got to get to an election. Can these people possibly be a little street smart? I don't know what happened with Mike Gallagher. I don't understand. Some people have told me he should have gotten out early and had a special election. The way the special elections are going, I don't think you should do that. Now he's at past the point. We'll have a special election. He'll keep the seat vacant. You know, there's a chance they'll lose that seat. So he waited till after that. I would have just at least finished out your term. This what scary thing is what did Mike Gallagher see that made it feel so hopeless he had to leave? You know, Devin Nunes left because Trump offered him this job. But what did Mike Gallagher see? So that it just the whole country loses when Gallagher steps aside. You know, so what he did with China. So listen, let's see what happens. But Marjorie Taylor Greene, she and AOC, respectively, they raise the most money, they get the most attention, and they're the least deserving of all of it. They don't legislate, they sensationalize. And, you know, maybe she's going to be somebody to get pictures with at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. Not for me. That's the exact opposite of Joe Lieberman.
Baseball season kicking off this week. The Mets home opener was postponed due to rain, so they're going to kick off tomorrow. But a lot of folks are wondering what the story is with Shohei Ohtani. Pete Rose is saying if he had an interpreter, he would never have gotten banned from baseball. Give me your thoughts on the season in general and this Shohei Ohtani pseudo-scandal specifically.
Yeah, I'm thinking about doing this on Saturday night with Craig Carton and one of these authors that just spent significant time with Pete Rose, because I think it's a big deal. And, you know, I'm in an idealistic world to a degree where I just think the gambling and the fantasy football has kind of wiped out why I like sports. I don't really want to win my fantasy football league. I like the Giants and Mets to win.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys have all – now you have people showing up cheering for the point spread, and people are noticing it as players and coaches. And now you got a guy who's a minor player up with the Raptors who is now doing one of these – what are those called, those bets? Those niche
prop
bets?
Prop bets.
Prop bets. Mm-hmm. He's betting his under
parlay.
On him, and he fakes an ankle injury and made a ton of money, evidently, or people have made, and people made a ton of money. So that, between that and Ohtani saying never bet and never bet on baseball, man, he set the bar. If this bookie comes out and goes, no, I talked to him, and that was his money, and they showed up together, and I took, why would that bookie cover for Ohtani? He's going to jail for illegal, even though it would have been legal to do it in New York. It's not legal in California. And that guy knows the answers. Is there a chance that Ohtani is so removed that this guy, he got all the passwords and the interpreter was able to spend $4.5 million of the Ohtani fortune without him knowing it? I don't know. It's kind of weird to change your story in one day from I lent him money because he was had some bets to he used my money and he's fired. And he lied to me. If everything turns out, but when in life, Frank, has any of these things turned out the way they initially tell us it happened?
You know, you said it, and it's true in sports and in politics and in life. Brian Kilmeade, catch him on Fox and Friends this morning. He's got a great radio show coming up, including with Jonathan Haidt, who we were talking about earlier. Can't wait to hear that interview. Brian, let's talk again soon.
Stay within yourself, Frank. Go get him.
15 seconds of fame straight ahead.
The Other Side of Midnight. It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
This is The Other Side of Midnight, a couple of minutes before the top of the hour. What do you say we give you a little bit of time to chat about whatever you like? 800-848-9222.
The Other Side of Midnight. This is 15 Seconds of Fame.
Lenny.
You're a superstar.
Raji.
Hello. Don't be a sucker. Even if you are the first caller, Brian Kilmeade will continue reminding the listeners that he will soon be taking calls until 2 hours go by and the show mercifully comes to an end.
E. Frank.
Would you believe this, Frank? Would you believe this, Frank? In my church and parish, there's only unmindful toil and sinful abuse of Holy Thursday.
Rocco.
I guess Shohei Ohtani should have signed with a New York team. Legal betting. Hey, Shohei, bad, bad, bad. Hey, and you punks punching women, come and punch me. I'll knock the hell out of you. You better stop that garbage, eh?
Cheech.
The communist, globalist, and the overeducated took the Ten Commandments out of the classroom. And you wonder why there are less religious people in our nation? Senator Joseph McCarthy was right. Say three Hail Marys a day for our nation.
Jerry.
Show me the color. Show me the color. Pete, Rose, paint yourself black. Paint it black. Where?
Donna.
Hi, my son got married on a boat by a woman who just performed ceremonies. It was the most beautiful ceremony. It was just outstanding. And but my relative, who thought it was horrible that he didn't get married in church, she's a divorced woman.
Ah, very interesting. Beautiful. Donna, thank you for that extra newspaper last week as well. Appreciate that. That is my newspaper woman, Donna. All right, that slams the lid on things for today. Till tomorrow, Frank Morano, good day.